Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.
Speak up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish speaking peoples. You can also listen online at our website, cjsf.ca, or as you might just have heard about, our app, which you can get in the App Store or the Google Play Store, depending on your phone, mobile device preference, I suppose, your operating system. And today on the show, I guess I should remind you that I am Jesse, or let you know, if this is your first time tuning in, that I am Jesse. And this program, Speak Up, is the CJSF Public Affairs Department's open format talk program where Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, you will hear lots of different talk things, lots of different bits and pieces. Today, we have another interview produced by Public Affairs Department Work Study William with digital artist Juan Ramirez. So that will take up most of the hour, the last three quarters or so. And we've got a couple other little bits, probably just one, I guess, based on the amount of time we have. But of course, there will also be a little bit of music to transition between things. And as always, we are going to start with some brand new local music, because it's not always brand new. And today it's pretty brand new. It's from an album that comes out tomorrow on Friday, the new record It's About Time by Future Star, who is an amazing local pop, indie pop, dream pop artist, who is, as I have just said, putting out a full-length record tomorrow. And there's a release party also tomorrow at the Red Gate, 1965 Main Street, Vancouver. You can see Future Star releasing the record It's About Time, along with the other great local bands, Worrywart, Be Afraid, and Non-La. It's going to be great. And I hope I will see you there. And to help convince you, I'm going to play for you the title track of the new record by Future Star, It's About Time.
It's not about the lines on your face. It's not about the bad knee. It's not about wishing that you were any younger or had something that young people have. It's about time. And it's about the notes that you choose. And it's about time. Drugs that you did. It's not about the drinking. It's not about the mistakes and the accidents that happened or the friends that you lost along the way. It's about the people that stay and the people who could still come back. 'Cause it's about time, and anything will happen if you wait long enough. It's about time, and it's about the notes that you choose. And it's about time, and it's about the way that you fill someone else's shoes. And it's about time, and it's about the notes that you choose. And it's about time, and it's about the way that you fill someone else's shoes. And it's about time, and it's about space, and it's about time that you looked it in the face. You're getting older now, we're getting older now.
Right, as the clock tolls, It's About Time by Future Star, playing a release show tomorrow night, Friday, at Red Gate, along with Be Afraid, Worrywart, and Non-Law. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite. You can find a link to that at Future Star's website, which is futurestar.rocks. Okay, we're going to move on to our next bit of the day. This is from Frequency News, the national collection of works produced by reporters in the Local Journalism Initiative. This piece comes to us from Louis Belcourt from CKTZ Cortez Island, and is about Sam Tudor, a recording artist based in Vancouver who is currently touring across BC to showcase their newly released EP, and recently included a show on Cortez Island as part of the tour. Tudor is a self-taught musician and recording artist who has been recording and releasing music since 2014. The show at Manson's Hall on Cortez Island marked Sam's debut performance on the island, arranged spontaneously following a recommendation from a friend with ties to Cortez. That happened on Tuesday, and CKTZ... Sorry, CKTZ. It is July 4th, so maybe we can use the American pronunciation. Has more on this story.
This is a CKTZ news update. I'm Louis Belcourt.
Sam Tudor, a Vancouver-based recording artist, is performing their newly released EP across BC and has added a Cortez Island show to the tour. Sam is a self-taught musician and recording artist who has been recording and releasing music since 2014. The artist has never before performed on the island, but spontaneously booked the event at Manson's Hall when suggested to by a friend who has connections on Cortez. Hidden Minute, Sam's new EP, was released on June 15th. The release show will be in Vancouver on Friday, June 28th, and the Cortez show will be on Tuesday, July 2nd at Manson's Hall. I spoke with Sam for more on the release and the upcoming tour.
Hi, my name's Sam Tudor. I'm a songwriter and producer and musician. I grew up in rural interior British Columbia in the Cariboo region, but spend most of the time in Vancouver now. And yeah.
Where did you get your start in music?
I guess I started playing music in high school and I was just playing guitar, but I think I was more interested in recording before I was actually interested in being a musician. I discovered GarageBand and I just love the idea of recording and like on those early Macs. And I feel like I actually had to learn to play music after the fact just because I wanted something to record.
Did you go through any formal training or was recording just always a personal practice and sort of a self-taught thing?
No formal training at all. It was all self-taught. And I had a lot of time. I grew up at a kids camp in the woods in the Cariboo. My parents run a kids camp near Williams Lake. So it was pretty remote. And there was a lot of time to just mess around with things with my two brothers. And we made movies and wrote songs and had lots of time to listen to music on long bus rides. So definitely not any serious formal training, that's for sure.
You're quite prolific. You've released multiple albums and EPs at this point, and you're just coming out with this new EP called Hidden Minute. Is the tour that you're on right now a sort of your release tour for this new EP?
Yeah, it is. And it feels great. We've never really done it this way, where we get to go on tour right after the EP comes out. The EP came out last Saturday, and then the day after we played the first show. So I'm really appreciating that. It feels a lot more immediate, especially because it took so long to finish the EP. So it feels like this celebration. And also the way I record is pretty internal, I guess. I do everything just in my room and one track at a time often. And so this is like the inverse of that, to get to play the songs with friends in a lot of different unique places. So it's refreshing.
Tell me about how this project feels different, or maybe even the same, of some of your other projects. What does this new release mean for you?
That's a good question. I feel this is definitely the first time where something I've made has felt really accurate. I feel like in the past, because so much of this recording that I've done is just trying to learn how to do it, and I really just love tinkering with and layering sounds in my room and stuff. And so a lot of the times the stuff I've recorded in the past, it just is a result of how much I know, or I'm limited by what's around me, what instruments are around me. And at this camp where I grew up, we only had a couple different instruments, and those kind of dictated how the records sounded. And I feel like now I have a lot of peers who I really love to record with, and I have enough tools now that I was able to actually make something that is more true to me. I guess with previous records, even though I'm proud of previous records, they were all the end product with me just being like, oh, I guess that's how that turned out. They were all just accidents. And this one feels like it was a little more, I was able to execute. I was able to step back and say, oh yeah, that is what I meant to say. So that's something that feels pretty different. And I've never done an EP before also. It was interesting to just only focus on four songs. And I actually did it because I thought it would be faster, because I'm pretty neurotic and I tend to beat myself up finishing an album. And I thought making an EP would be a little more chill, but I just ended up spending the same amount of energy on only four songs. So I don't know.
Cortez people are super excited to hear that you're actually adding a Cortez show to this tour. What brought you to book this show on Cortez?
One thing I'm really excited about the entire tour is that it's entirely house shows, with the exception of our Vancouver show. And last summer we toured with, you know, in larger venues and bars and stuff. But I thought it would be cool to just explore the songs in a really intimate setting. And we have a lot of connections to small towns in BC and the Cariboo. So it's just felt pretty good to drive around. And yeah, the whole tour has a really specific energy to it that's really different from anything I've done before, because of the nature of it all being house shows. And I know Cortez show isn't a house show, but our friend Robbie Banks invited us to play on Cortez with him and his bandmate Gemma. And I feel like a big part of what we like to do when we tour is like to see new places and find new things. And we've never been to Cortez before, and I've heard only good things about it. And it just seems like really aligned with how we want this whole tour to be, like playing in cool, unique spaces that aren't necessarily just loud bars or venues or anything like that, and explore the new songs in a different way and every night in a different setting. And it just, when we were invited to play on Cortez, it just seemed perfect for this tour.
Thanks so much for speaking with me, Sam.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Louis Beaucourt, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Do you feel free now? Are you racking up the numbers, working through a summer that you won't recall? Have you lost it now? now. Unshakable but broken, every phrase a token of a morning song. It's soon to be decided on. We change today like a lullaby. Change today and let it go. Change the space that you occupy before it gets too close.
A little bit of Sam Tudor, the song Do You Feel Free Now from the new record Hidden Minute. Sam Tudor's show just wrapped up, but they're local, so you'll see him around. You can find out more at samtudormusic.com. All right, now on to our feature for the day, which is an interview with digital artist Juan Ramirez, produced by CJSF Public Affairs Department Work Study William. And without further ado, here it is.
Hi, this is William Hofsink, speaking for CJSF Speak Out, and I am here with digital artist Juan Ramirez. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm originally from Colombia. I came to Canada in 2002 with my family when I was 14. I had the privilege to go into engineering, and I learned about electronic engineering in school. That's kind of my day-to-day job. And I had the opportunity to work on different projects like solar power lights, and now I'm working on methane detection systems. And art kind of has always been something that I've done my whole life. And then just in the last, probably since 2018, 2019, I started kind of going into more of a digital area just because it really worked well with my day job. And I was trying to find a way to combine both software and art in an interesting way.
That's really cool, because like I think what kind of drew me into your work when I was doing some like scrolling is you have a very optimistic perspective on the use of AI and I think new media in the art world that is kind of atypical from a lot of digital artists that I follow. And I don't want to paint you as someone who is like completely gung-ho about it, because you do have a nuanced perspective on it. But I'm wondering too, how do you think like the use of AI models as they become more like widely acknowledged, such as like Midjourney and Stable Diffusion, like how do you think they should be addressed in an artistic context? Or maybe you want to give a little bit of like background too on like what drew you into AI as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I started playing around with, I've known about AI and machine learning for a long time, and I used it in my work. So I'm familiar with kind of the mechanisms that are used in order to create the systems. But then, you know, in 2020 and Midjourney and ChatGPT kind of started coming to age, and they became something in the mainstream. So I really started just going right deep into those systems and learning how they actually work and what they actually are and what they aren't. And it's really interesting from the technology perspective, which is, I'm really interested in that and how they actually make all the systems work and the work that goes behind them. So I started thinking about, you know, everything in a system is inputs and outputs, right? And it was really interesting to see that all these companies have found these big data models that are publicly available. And they started training all these computers in how to generate images from this, you know, database of images that are being compiled into this data set. And the more I kind of dug into it, the more convinced I found myself thinking that this is going to be a new revolution. This is a new internet. And this is what the world is going to do from now on. It's going to become a part of our lives, whether we like it or not, just like social media did back in the day when people were just taking pictures of their food. And now there's whole businesses that are run on this technology. So right at the beginning, I thought we can't allow AI to become what social media became, which is we ignore it for a long time, which I did. I didn't have a Facebook page for a long time. You know, I'm not very good at it. I wish I was, but I'm not. I don't utilize it to its max potential. But this technology, AI, is even more scary. What can be done? If we are not educated on what its capabilities are and what the type of outputs that can be generated, then we as humans are going to suffer because we're not going to be able to figure out what's real, what's not. We're not going to know that, oh, you can actually create whole deep fakes of people with their voice and their likeness.
I've seen it. It's uncanny. Yeah.
It's uncanny. Actually, I'm working on this article called Beyond the Uncanny Valley, right? Because for the, I don't know if you heard that concept, but the uncanny, right? And I think we are going past that. And what lays beyond the uncanny valley? What happens when we actually can't tell, you know, anymore that something is not human? And I think we're getting to that point. The new ChatGPT model, the 4.0, as they call it, we're getting very close to not being able to differentiate that. And we need to be aware of that. And I thought as an artist that it would be good for me to show people what it can do and how it can be incorporated into your art practice. And I've done that now. We had a project in the summer, a Canada-wide project to celebrate the life of Jean-Paul Riopelle, a famous Canadian artist. And our proposal was to create this program where we would go to high schools and we would teach kids in high school about Midjourney, AI image generator, and they would create images in the style of Jean-Paul Riopelle, because that's one of the things you can do with AI. You can get these models to generate paintings in the style of a particular painter. So we were doing that, and it was really interesting to see these kids that weren't particularly artistic per se, some of them were, and learning about how to talk to this new, because it's a new way of programming. That's the way I see it.
Right.
It's a new programming language. It's not as straightforward as talking to you and I, like what we're doing right now. You have to have a little bit of knowledge of what you can do. And we, you know, we show them the good, the bad, how you could use it, how you could incorporate it into your art practice. And at the end, the kids generated the prompts that eventually became the images that were displayed at the Malahat Skywalk last summer.
That's really interesting too, because like, just kind of an aside as well. Yesterday was my mom's birthday, and we went out to a restaurant that had it was all themed after a 50s diner, but all of the art displays, we could tell very easily at this point that it's AI generated. Like the text was the text was a bit malformed.
Right.
The faces looked and that's like again a big worry that I've seen in the artistic community is that the art itself, almost becomes like a patchwork of other artists' designs, other aesthetic. And when you bring to mind, sorry, what was this artist you?
Jean-Paul Riopelle.
Jean-Paul Riopelle. Yeah, like I've seen specific models too. Like I had been experimenting with Suno, the music model, and they've actually put a ban on specific artists that they could imitate.
A specific name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, what is the line between, like, tribute and plagiarism here? Because I think that is the one sort of area that I think I'm most wary of when I look into AI, when I do my own research.
Right, and that's a great question. It's hard to figure out where that line is. I think personally what I do is whenever I use AI, anything that I work with, I'm outright and I say that I used it. So that's number one, is that you have to communicate to other humans that AI was used. And you're starting to see that in social media. When you make an Instagram post, you can tag something as made by AI. Mm-hmm. I think those are the things that we need to start doing. Maybe there's a way to automate the system. I don't know yet. But first is to be out front with what you're doing. If you're trying to trick people, I think that's where you cross that line. When you're trying to say that this is actually made by a human when it wasn't, that's the line to me. And the whole thing with plagiarism, I think we have to be careful as artists of what we're really mad about, right? I remember that this companies have taken our images and are training the models and they're profiting from our images. Is that what we're mad about? Or that the computer can actually generate something that is close to our style or to our actual work? What is it that we're actually concerned about? Because when you think about there have been cases previously with Google Images, for example. Google Images, Google is a company for profit. And when you go and you put Picasso or you put any artist, they will show you images of that artist, right? And right. they're using the Google search. They're making money out of that. But somehow we're not mad at that, at that use of the technology. What's the difference between something that is being generated by this AI monster that can give you something in the style of Picasso or showing you a Picasso actual painting on a Google search? So, and what happened was that Google won. They said, well, we're not using this. Our technology is not being used to replicate their work. We're changing its use. And I think that's the criteria that we're going to fall into with this, all these AI companies, is that they're not saying that they're making art. They're saying that they're using it as a base for their models. And then the output and how people use it, that's the problem, right? It's the outcome and how people actually use the output of these machines that becomes the problem. So personally, I don't think people buy art because of the finished product. Sometimes it is, but I think people buy art because of the artist. People are really concerned about how the artist works, their process. We're always interested in how does an artist come up with a song, right? How does an artist come up with a painting? How do you think of this? And I think as artists, we need to start selling our process and our way of thinking. That's the part that makes it unique, right? Everyone says, oh, I could have done that. It's like, yeah, but you didn't. You didn't think about that. And that's the part that makes us unique. So we need to be able to be better at communicating, which I'm not the best. Communicating our process, and I think that's what we need to focus on as artists.
I couldn't have put it better. Like, mind you, I'm not like I dabble in music, and I dabble in collages. Which again, collage, that's another example of something where you're taking copyrighted material and putting a new spin on it. And even photography, right? Like, I think it took until the 90s where that was considered like true, or could be considered true high art. And so, like, yeah, it's kind of baffling to me too, would people put their nose up at. But you did mention too about like being interested in like the process of like music and how musicians might create art. And I've seen also that your visual art, I've seen some like punk iconography and lyricism. And I'm wondering too, like, how has music, like, specifically impacted your visual arts? Because, like, I'm
a musician as well. So definitely a lot. So that's, you know, that's something that is, you know, I've been playing music. My amps and my guitars are here. So I've been playing music for many years. It's always interesting because I always like to learn about, like, you know, how you came up with what you came up with. And lyrics is a good example of, like, a lot of musicians, not all, obviously, they're all different, but they'll fit the lyric to the melody, right? But the lyric didn't really mean anything. They're trying to fit the words into a melody that they came up with because the melody is more important than the actual word they're using. And you see that with the Beatles, and, you know, like, you see that with how they came up with Yesterday. There was all, you know, they're always just making up words, and then later on they change the words to make it a little more interesting, but it's still, you know, serving the melody. So from that perspective, I'm always thinking kind of the same thing with my art. It's like, how do I serve the message that I'm trying to put out? And what is that message? And sometimes I don't have one. Sometimes I just make things because I want to make things or because I have an idea in my head. But sometimes I do think about what I'm making a little bit more. So, you know, that's kind of the benefit of being an artist, is you kind of get to make it up as you go.
Yeah. And like, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of like my train of thought too, with wider access to AI models and like developing an understanding of the technology and the programming involved, it's almost very like punk in a way, like the do it yourself philosophy is really appealing. And obviously that's a component of art in general, but it's also been like the early days of computer, the early days of programming. Like that was, I think that was a very common intersection too. And like, so yeah, I'm just wondering too, if that's part of the appeal. It's like one of the, like, because you also said too that like some of the students you were speaking with, they didn't really come across as like artistic or artistically mm-hmm. inclined, but kind of getting that range, that free range to kind of create art